Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest tonight, or this evening, or this afternoon, is Michael Lopp. Michael, thank you for joining me.
Happy to be here.
So tell the people a little bit about yourself.
Let's see here. I am the VP of Engineering at Slack. I go around the internet as this gentleman named Rans, who writes about leadership, werewolves, and pens. And I have a blog called Rans in Repose. And there's probably other interesting things that maybe we'll stumble on as we talk.
Yes. Now, I want to ask you a question in regards to your... So you've written a book, you've written a couple books about managing humans is one of your books. And so my question to you is, what Star Trek captain do you think is the best manager?
Oh, my gosh. God, could have guessed you were going to ask something like that. kind of depends on the company that you're building, right?
Oh,
yeah, right. So there's definitely there's going to be some. And by the way, Enterprise, the last one, I don't really have a good sense of him, so yeah, I can't really comment on him.
Archer, we'll keep him on the sideline. But the answer is not Archer.
I'm gonna go with Picard primarily because of consistency and consistency of values. I'm sure there's he contradicts himself all the time, but Picard you could kind of count on. It's steady, good father figure type, not a lot of randomness. I'm not saying that would be the great leader for every situation. You need a little Kirk every now and then, kind of for that passion and sort of just go for it. And I could see I could see some Janeway, kind of Janeway feels Picard-y to me, if you will. And Sisko, I'm going to go with Picard.
I think I know the answer to this, but would you consider yourself a Star Trek fan?
I am. You did pick Enterprise, which I didn't. I watched. I watched this episode, obviously, for this, but I hadn't. I watched it when the season came out, when the series started. I watched one or two, and I just kind of dropped it. And I was kind of fading at the Voyager time. But I realized one thing that was a major, major problem for me on Enterprise was the intro song. Is just. I mean, I'm sure there's web pages and podcasts dedicated to the horrificness of this song, but it's truly awful. It's like a boy band. I hadn't heard in years. I had a boy band song for Enterprise. And I'm sure you've talked about this a ton, but it just completely is disconnected from sort of my Star Trek vibe. But watch all the movies, watch most of the episodes, rewatch things every now and then just to kind of, re-experience them. So yes, I am a Star Trek fan.
Excellent. My kids
are too. So
continuing the tradition. I have spent a lot of time talking about every time Enterprise is selected randomly, except for twice, because when they have a Mirror Mirror two-parter in the Mirror Mirror universe, and they change the theme song for those. and it's good because it's instrumental. but every other time I talk about how awful that song is, and it saddens me because I think the intro, the images that they play underneath that awful song are great, but they ruin it with that song. Clearly, Enterprise, if you had to pick a series that was your favorite, not Enterprise, because you've seen maybe four episodes of Enterprise, which one would you pick? What is your Star Trek? When you think Star Trek, what pops into your head?
Well, I mean, so let's talk. I'm in my 40s, so I was watching the original series, and that, it's aging strangely. It's kind of odd. But the one that I probably resonates with the most is definitely the original series. The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, that feels like a whole different generation, and they feel a little bit more contemporary to me, if you will, because the original one was 10 years before me. It's a kind of a trade-off between Next Generation and the original series. Both of them are literally burned in my brain.
I think it is funny. Whenever I watch the original series, I forget that it's 50 years old. It's a 50-year-old TV show. Because in my memory, I've seen them all, so I have memories of all the episodes, and then I watch them, and I think, I skip over all the kind of boring parts where they're just kind of looking at each other or walking down corridors, and get to the good parts.
this will date me, but it was... Star Trek was on Channel 2 here, and I live in Northern California in San Francisco. It was one of the four TV channels that we got, and two was the best because I live in the boonies. So it was, I mean, I was watching it every day for 3 years, the same like one series. So it was, there's not a lot of content back then except books.
Yes, I know there are many people who listen to this podcast who it is a foreign idea that you cannot just watch almost anything you want in the world instantaneously. But there was a time when you had to wait for it to show up on a limited number of channels.
That is correct.
And you couldn't change it. And, you know, if you started in the middle, you couldn't rewind it. You had to just wait and hope it came on again, which you probably would because there wasn't that much on television and you could watch the first half.
I have actually forgotten that. Yes, you're right.
It was a dark time. And then when The Next Generation was in syndication, so depending on where you were, like if you traveled, it was on a different channel. If you were trying to keep up abreast with what was happening, which was annoying. But all the things you don't have to worry about nowadays.
Yes. My sister for Next Generation was so – the family was so into it because we were so happy to see it back. She recorded them all on VHS tapes, and there were a lot of them. And VHS tapes are large, and I remember there were like shelves, and she was like making up like labels for them and stuff like that. So stacks and stacks of stuff that has now been thrown away.
Oh, well, but she can now get them on Netflix. So
exactly.
It takes up no space, although I have the Blu-rays for some reason, but because I'm crazy. And I wanted to be as highly high def as possible. I also have all the Enterprise Blu-rays.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. I'm hoping that they will come out, and I'm pretty sure they won't, with Deep Space Nine remastered for Blu-ray because it is my favorite of the Star Treks.
It is definitely the most complex. Mm-hmm. My best friend got totally into Deep Space Nine, and he was like, after I was kind of half watching it, and he's like, no, this is really good. And it was, I'm like, okay, what do you mean? And I watched, I'm like, oh, they actually really got into some interesting political and people stuff.
Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, the interesting thing about Deep Space Nine is that, and I've said this a lot before on my podcast as well, that it is Federation people, but they have to interact on a day-to-day basis with non-Federation folks. And and you get to see a different side of the Federation. Not everybody is excited to be part of the Federation or even wants to be part of the Federation. There are a lot of people who think the Federation are annoying and should just butt out and are good two-shoes. And that's not a side you see a lot of in the Next Generation or the original series. You know, the original series mostly is like, Kirk, I come to your planet, your society is stupid, I fix it, and I leave.
Peace out.
Exactly. And Picard is like, let's talk about it. We shouldn't interfere. Riker punches somebody, and then they leave. Deep Space Nine, they ponder these weighty questions, which is a good transition to the episode that we watched today, which is not Deep Space Nine. It is an Enterprise episode, which I think I've seen before, but I can't remember. Season 3, Episode 10, Similitude, I suppose is how you say it. And this is this has some... Well, really, one big kind of ethical quandary.
Yeah.
Which, before we get into this, so you have not seen a lot of Enterprise. So were you confused by many things? I mean, this is a late, a mid third season, so that's late. They're in the kind of the Zindi War, which is kind of touched upon, but not really super relevant.
Right.
Except for Archer's compulsion to do what he has to do.
Yeah, that was – so we'll talk about that. Do we do the arc here at some point? But it was a fairly self-contained episode. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a lot that I had to go and be like, what's going on here? As only having like, you know, kind of – it was directed by LeVar Burton. Did you know that? I just saw that on
Wikipedia.
I was pretty self-contained. There was one – and this was – you just answered this question sort of, which was there was this one – he had this make this very hard and ethically hard question. I had to make this hard decision, and it was about the Expanse, and I'm like, what's the Expanse, and why is he so angry about this thing?
Why?
And it makes sense now that you allude to this whole like arc going on here that's driving him, why he chooses this, because watched in a vacuum, you're like, dude's really kind of doing something evil here, right?
And, maybe you should just go to a starbase. Right?
Yeah, and like fix him, right?
Exactly, yes.
So, but that was probably the only part where I was like, huh, the characters, I'm like, oh, I remember these characters. That wasn't that. But it was really just about, Trip, really, and the evolving relationship with, what's her name, T'Pol.
T'Pol.
Yeah. Do we do the arc, or do we just kind of let people wander?
We can wander through whatever pops. It's not, there's no structure. It doesn't have to be.
So I had a question about the T'Pol trip thing. Is there clearly, is there something going on before this? And you're telling me, because I've only watched one episode of this season, obviously. I thought it was interesting if that they were using this story that they're doing to get them to move the relationship forward. Were they already kissing before this episode, or was that the first kiss that's happened between these two characters?
I believe there has always been a little bit of sexual tension between the two. Right. But I think that this is the first one where kind of Trip, but who isn't really Trip, really explains to T'Pol that he has these feelings for her. And she, of course, is like, well, I don't have any feelings for you, but she really does. Oh, T'Pol.
So, and
I think, that they do eventually get together.
It was interesting because I was thinking that not knowing the arc is like, if this is this, we better tell people what are going on. So what happens is Trip, and by the way, I'm newbie to all this, so if I screwed up, just, you know, correct me. So Trip, is trying to fix the engines and, like, do some things, and Warp 5 is hard and stuff like that. And then he gets exposed, and he gets thrown into a coma. So then he so the doctor, who happens to have this, burrata cheese sort of thing, symbiote thing.
Yes. That
when you inject a DNA of a human in it, it creates a clone, essentially. And like, it only has 15 days of life. So, and also we learn that it has all of his memories as well. So you get this super fast Trip version.
Very convenient.
Very convenient and very easy. He has all of the memories and whatnot. And it was interesting. But then that's the thing I was wondering is like, okay, did they use that as a means to kind of move the relationship with T'Pol and him, which I thought was interesting.
Yes. And I think that I also think, and you know, we're heading to the end of this episode. The beginning of this episode starts with a funeral and you think, oh my gosh, Trip is dead.
Right.
Yeah. You don't really think that because you're watching and he's a main character, so he's not going to be dead. And it turns out he's not dead. It's this clone which isn't really a clone. It's a mnemonic symbiote, whichever. I don't know what the difference between a clone and a mnemonic symbiote is, but apparently there's a difference. Maybe the difference is that clones are grown in fats and these are grown in like plastic jelly beans or whatever that thing was. So he's dead. But they've killed him basically to harvest his neural
something
yeah, tissue so that they can inject it back into the real Trip. I will say real. That seems like a judgment call, but you know, actual Prime Trip Prime, and save him. But sadly, they have to kill Sim. They call him, which seems like a mean name. Let's be frank.
Also, killing him mean too.
Killing him is mean, but he does kind of come around to it and volunteer to die, so it's okay. I guess maybe we'll talk about that. As you said, he ages. The big thing about these things is they grow in these wacky larva things,
right?
But they have a 15-day life cycle, so no matter what DNA you inject in there, no one's apparently ever done it with human DNA. But they will create this little clone, and it will go through its whole life and then die in 15 days.
Right.
Which seems weird. But we will accept it for what it is.
And it's just sitting there on his shelf, the doctor's shelf. By the way, I've got this thing.
Dr. Phlox is one of my favorite characters on Enterprise, mostly because he is unlike any other doctor in Star Trek, right? Because he's kind of the first doctor to go on a long-range mission, and he brings all these weird – this is part of his character. He's an alien.
Okay.
He brings all these weird things with him to treat stuff. So he had this thing mainly because he said it secretes some kind of fluid that is antibacterial or something, so he uses it to treat like cuts or something. But also it can grow people.
Okay.
FYI, I've never mentioned this before, but I totally can grow people.
Yeah, it seemed very convenient.
Yes. And then Archer actually says, you just have this on your shelf. And he's like, yeah, well, what do you, I'm an alien. What do you want from me? So the first kind of moral quandary for Archer is, do we do it or not?
Right.
And Phlox says, you know, I have to tell you. Archer basically says, I can't believe you're even asking me this. And Phlox says, well, I have to give you all options. you're the captain. Suck it up and make a decision, basically. And Archer wants to know, well, Willie, you know, Phlox says, don't worry, the procedure probably won't kill the clone, and it will live its full life, which is 15 days, and everything will be fine.
I think he's a little more firm on that. I thought I'd have to go back and watch it. I think he really says the clone will experience no discomfort.
He does, yes.
and he's like very clear about that. And mm-hmm. that's important when, as you were explaining, that situation changes.
Yes. It becomes clear that Phlox perhaps is a good doctor, but not the best scientist because it has never happened. He's never tried it with human DNA before. So he doesn't really know what's going to happen. But I guess he doesn't want to say that to Archer. So he doesn't.
You think that's true? Interesting.
I don't know. Well, that's my guess. I don't know. Because I think basically he has two choices as a doctor, right? He can either try doing this and save his patient or not try doing this and his patient dies.
Right.
And so he is coming at it from the way of, I really should try every avenue to save this patient.
Yeah.
And it's not really his choice, although he is strongly leading Archer to do it.
Right, right.
It's Archer's choice. And then we can talk about Archer. I don't really like Archer.
He looks really – Scott Bakula looks tired. Again, I'm watching this – but he looks like tired. They've like – and that's not just like he's getting older and da-da-da. They actually have him as tired. He's got like a little bit of a 5 o'clock shadow. Mm-hmm. Maybe this is sort of what's going on with the Expanse and all the stuff. I don't know exactly. But I like made a note. And I'm like, he looks really like worn out.
He is – he could use a little nap, Captain Archer. I feel like Captain Archer is – he is very dour, in other episodes where fun things are happening. He is still kind of a dour kind of guy. And Scott Bakula, I've seen Scott Bakula play many roles, and he is not a dour guy in his roles. He may be in life. I don't know. But and so clearly it was a choice. They said, listen, you are a military guy. You are by the books kind of you want to save your crew and keep the Earth safe. And that is what you do no matter what. Which informs his decision, right? So the thing you need to know is the Zindi War is happening. The Zindi are this race of aliens, which we do not see in this episode, but they are mentioned. They built this weapon, that they shot at Earth and killed a bunch of people in Florida. Which makes everybody sad. And so they are going into the Expanse, which is where the Zindi hang out, to destroy, the Zindi super weapon that they're building that is going to destroy the Earth, unless they can stop them. And that's why Archer's like, I have to do whatever I have to do. It's kind of a very Janeway kind of thing, right? Because Janeway was in a lot of situations where she had to make tough moral decisions and, she was cut off from all the rest of the Federation, so she made perhaps some choices that she wouldn't have made otherwise.
Right.
Although I feel like Kate Mulgrew and the character of Janeway pulled it off better than Captain Archer. That's just my opinion. People who love Captain Archer, send me an email and let me know. I'm sure there are three people listening who are outraged by my dislike of Captain Archer.
I am ambivalent. Scott Bakula just looked really tired. I was like, this dude's tired.
He is tired. But he has to make this decision. What does he do? And he spends a little bit of time thinking about it. He doesn't really ask anybody's opinion about it, which I found kind of – I don't know if that's a good thing to do or not. You write about management. Is that something – should you just – like you have this giant decision. It would be my first instinct to gather like my T'Pol, who's a science officer, and other folks and just say, oh, I have to deal with this thing. Let's talk it out.
The rule of leadership is like ideas get better with more eyeballs. So I would totally, especially if you're talking about, killing someone to harvest their parts. this is the decision he's trying to make. And this person, when they look like, some burrata cheese, it's really easy. But when it looks like Trip and you're like, this person is a person now and they have the memories and they remember all these things and they have feelings and whatnot, it gets a little trickier. But yeah, I probably would have vetted that one with a couple of folks to kind of take some different perspectives on it. Because it's really an interesting, it's actually a really hard moral question.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what so at first when I was watching this, I thought, well, clearly – you just make the clone and you take the parts that you need.
Right.
But then you don't really think about, you know, I'm thinking of like a clone in a vat that doesn't really move around and it's just kind of hanging out there and it's raw material. So it's not a big deal. And they did, obviously this clone is a living, breathing, walking around.
Right.
They make him part of the crew, which is kind of weird.
It's like the, you know, it's, this is, yeah, that's just weird. They're like, it's like the stray dog sort of thing, right? You just, you don't, you're like, you don't get attached. And that's the interesting thing of it is when it's sort of like the burrata cheese, you're like, oh, okay, I can see how this would work. But then it's obviously Trip. Like he has all the memories and has all that motivation. And it's really, it was, I was uncomfortable with the final kind of decision that they came to because, you know, that they're basically saying you have to sacrifice yourself. And by the way, yes, you're dying in three more days, but that doesn't really change that. This is, as far as we're concerned, this is a version of Trip, right?
And I guess while this is all happening, we should talk. Their engines are broken. That's what knocked Trip out in his coma. And they're also getting some kind of space muck on the Enterprise that's making it difficult for them to move. And even if they could restart the engines at a certain point, it would sap all of the energy out of their systems and they'd all die in a big ball of space grossness. and so these are also external pressures that are making Captain Archer make some decisions quickly. And so basically he decides, okay, his first tough decision, which he doesn't really talk to anybody about, is clone. Yes, let's make the clone. Let's make it happen. And there's a scene where T'Pol says, hey, have you, you know, she's close to Trip. They're not in a relationship, but she's close to him. So she says, hey, Captain Archer, have you made any more progress in, you know, coming up with if we're going to clone or not? And Archer's like, oh, yeah, I told Dr. Phlox already to do it.
She's like, what?
Which led me to believe he didn't talk to a lot of people about this. Although everyone, it's a small crew, so everyone I'm sure knows about it. But I guess he just went off into his room, sat with his dog, and thought about it. And came to his which is really, I guess, in that situation, kind of the only answer that you would end up with, I think, because you can't, you're stuck.
Right.
You, and the doctor's telling you that this procedure will happen. The clone will be fine. It will not even feel any discomfort. So there's no downside, right? But then it turns out it gets complicated.
Yeah. In the clone, the procedure, because the doctor only had the data from the other species that wherever this thing came from, that would be fine. But when it's humans, it's actually going to kill him.
Yes. And apparently the other side effect with humans that we did not know until this very moment is that apparently we encode our memories in our genetics, which seems like a stretch. But I am not a geneticist, so I don't know.
Well, and the doctor says, that's an important discovery. I'm like, yeah, that's good to know that it's in our DNA.
It seems like a giant discovery.
Someone write that down.
That's right. Someone take a note. And so, you know, we get little baby Trip, they don't call him Trip. They call him Sim because they have to come up with a name.
Totally bad name.
That is not a good name. And Dr. Phlox is, you know, caring for him because who else is going to care for him? And they say, well, where are we going to keep him? And they say, well, we'll keep him in the sick bay. And it didn't dawn on me until they showed it later, but they're keeping him in sick bay and then hiding Trip's body from him.
Well, that's right, yeah. Because Coma Trip is sitting there on a table there trying to, like, you know, figure out what to do.
Behind a curtain. So they say, never look behind this curtain, Sim. Which, of course, if you tell a kid that, the first thing they're going to do is look behind that curtain.
I realize it's Star Trek here, but like that whole concept of him growing up fast, like learning things and developing judgment. I guess it's the knowledge and the DNA thing that explains all of it. But like, just imagine that. Like, I'm in my 40s and I'm still learning stuff. And like, it's the process of learning that actually teaches me these things. And like, you do that fast. I that's just a big stretch. But again, Star Trek,
and apparently he just remembers everything. But the memories coincide. Like, he has to. It would seem to me, and once again, not a space geneticist, not even a normal geneticist. But if all your memories are encoded in your genes, wouldn't you just know them all immediately? So you'd have little toddler Trip, with all of his memories.
I'm like, hey, let's work on the warp engine.
Exactly, I can fix it. I've got 12 days. Let's go. But no, it takes time. He has to grow into his memories, basically.
Right.
Which seems a little odd, but it is what it is. But then that kind of breaks down, though, because there's kind of like teenager adolescent Trip, who is working with T'Pol on the warp engines. And he's like, hey, T'Pol, do you want to go watch the Marx Brothers movie that we're watching for no apparent reason later? Which seems like an odd choice, but maybe Paramount owns the rights to Marx Brothers movies or something. They don't actually show the movie, so it's okay. And she's like, no, you know, we're stuck. We're all perilously close to death. Maybe we should concentrate on our work.
Focus Trip.
Exactly. He's like, oh, all right. How about we have dinner? And she's like, no, I really have to, once again, Sim, we're all going to die. Maybe we should skip dinner or have some dinner, a working dinner, maybe. He is sad about this, and he accuses her of not being interested in him because he is a clone and not the real Trip, which I think is a valid reason to not be interested in someone.
Correct.
But he's also an adolescent, which also complicates it because he's like young Trip, and it would be an inappropriate relationship. Although I guess right. In his maturation process, he is older. I don't know. I don't understand how it works.
Imagine waking up each morning and like you're walking into Sim's room and you're like, whoa, right? Because like what? Like 15 days, let's make he go lives to 100 or so. So what? I don't know what the math is. But like each morning you walk in and be like, holy, wow, you're like tall now, right? I mean, my kids grew fast, but like, dang.
That is a very fast. Yes, he goes from that tiny cute little baby to Trip that we know and love, or at least know, in, I think, what, 9 days or something like that?
Right, right.
Because they say he has 3 more days to live or something.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's crazy. And then he's normal Trip. Not, you know, normal Trip, but he looks like Trip.
Right.
Sim is walking around. He's got his little jumpsuit on, but he doesn't have any pips because he's not really a member of the crew. But they give him quarters, and they give him assignments to do, and everybody's working with him, so it must have been super weird for the rest of the crew.
Right.
Because he has all of his – and the complicating factor, of course, is that he has all the memories of Trip. So he thinks he's Trip, but everybody else doesn't think he's Trip. And so he's like, what's going on, people? And then he comes up with an idea to use a shuttlecraft to pull them out of this –
space goo. Space
goo, yes. And they're like, okay, sounds like a good plan. Let's give it a whirl. And Trip is like, or Sim is like, I totally want to be in one of the shuttlecraft because it's my plan and I should be responsible for it. And Captain Archer, I think, in a good judgment call, says no.
Yes.
For multiple reasons.
You need to harvest your brain.
That's right. Your brain is too precious for us to put in that shuttlecraft. Also, you've never flown a shuttlecraft before.
Well, yeah, memories in the DNA.
I don't know, though. That's the question, though, right? Would you – I mean, they're trusting him to tinker around with a warp drive.
Yeah,
Think they would trust him to pilot a shuttlecraft, but, you know, whatever. And him tinkering with a warp drive in the first place, the real Trip is what got them into this business.
And it blew up.
Let's
just be clear.
It did not go well. It was going well for like 2 seconds, and then all went to hell. Which is kind of what I like. There's not a whole heck of a lot I like about Enterprise, to be honest. But what I do like about it is this kind of, you know, they're kind of primitive. They're trying to still figure out stuff, so they can't get to warp 5. And that's kind of what Trip is trying to do, to get to warp 5. They don't have tractor beams, so they have the grappling hooks. I like that. Oh. They don't trust the transporters. They have one, but they don't use it because they don't trust it. So I kind of like that. Kind of.
Oh, that's interesting.
But I don't like most of the characters, so that's a problem with the show. And I don't like Archer, as I've said before. That's a big because he's like the main character.
Right.
I don't care for him. And so they don't take him to the shuttlecraft. The long story short, it looks like his plan is not going to work, and everyone's suddenly like, ugh, Sim, you're the worst. But they give him 2 more seconds, and it works, and everyone's like, hooray, Sim, we love you.
Right. And the shuttlecraft are literally exploding, and then they're not.
And then they're not. It's like, everybody's happy. that's where we see Meriwether gets his little screen time to pilot the shuttlecraft, and then we don't see him again. He is one of the main characters. But either it's an ensemble cast. It's hard to highlight everybody. So they're out of the space goo. That's part one of the dilemma, but they still need to get the engines working. And the other kind of time, ticking time bomb, as you will, is Trip or Sim's life is going to end soon.
Correct.
So they have to decide. He's about to get to the point. I guess they have to wait until he's exactly the age that Trip is.
Right.
Which doesn't make much sense, but hey, whatever. Because I feel like they could have just harvested when he was a baby, and it would have been fine.
We don't know this. It would make for boring television. They could have also just kept him asleep the entire time and let him grow. But like, anyway, so that would have been dramatically dull. It's like, oh, clone is still sleeping.
Nobody's going to get attached to him. We don't even know he has the memories. So. And this is where we find out, I think we find this out, that this is where Phlox says, well, Archer's like, okay, fire up your scalpels, Phlox. Let's get this thing going. your space scalpels. And Phlox says, well, there's a complication.
Problem.
He will die. Sim is going to die if we do this. And if we don't do this, Trip is going to die. So pick which one you want. And Archer's like, well, Sim is going to die anyway, so let's just pick Trip. And this is where we find out that Sim has been doing some research of his own.
Right.
And has found out this secret cabal of alien scientists from the planet where this weird thing comes from have created, or reportedly created, some kind of enzyme that allows for the mnemonic symbiote to live a full life. And so the question, Sim, is shouldn't we really look into that and save me as opposed to killing me to save Trip?
Yeah, it was, you know, at this point of the episode, having watched a lot of Star Trek, and I'm sure you've thought about this a lot more because you've watched more Star Trek than I have, is like there's like a flow chart to all of the sort of like flows of all the narratives of Star Trek. And this enzyme convention, this enzyme thing is like the final thing to make it really hard to make the decision.
Yep.
Right. And I'm like, I can't remember other episodes because I haven't watched a lot of Star Trek recently, but like this is the classic, like, oh, this is the last little like curveball before you actually know what's going to happen, which is what's going to happen there.
By the way, because you can see Sim is going to die in 3 days.
Right.
It's sad that he's going to die in 3 days, but, you know, he can save the life of someone who isn't going to die in 3 days unless we, you know. So it is a quandary, but it is not amped up enough. So you take away that 3-day death and suddenly you have to pick.
Like, no.
Exactly. Suddenly now you have to say who lives, who dies. Captain Archer, luckily, very confident in who's going to live and who's going to die. Because that's the kind of man he is. Although they do have – I like there's this nice scene where Archer and Trip are yelling at each other basically, or Sim, I should say.
Sim.
And Sim – Archer's like, you know, I have to save Trip. You have to save the Earth. You know what we're doing here, and we need Trip. And Sim says – what are you going to do? And Archer says, well, if you have all your memories, you know what I'm going to do. Which is kind of ominous. But then Sim says, you're not a murderer. And I like Archer's response is, don't make me a murderer. Basically saying, volunteer to die, so it's not my responsibility.
So he does, Sim does come around, and he's about to like take off in a shuttlecraft and you know, decides, like, hey, where am I going to go, right? The thing I didn't get is the thing that moves him to kind of decide to, you know, give up his life is something about his sister, which is a reference I didn't get. And it seemed without that knowledge, I'm like, this, like, I would have made a run for it even without any planets around. I'd be like, screw it, I got 3 days. I'm going to go fast forward and go see what's going on in the world. galaxy, sorry.
Also,
what was the sister convention?
The shuttlecraft don't have any toilets, so.
Did that seem odd? That, like,
it seems a little weird. I would think maybe you should put a toilet in your shuttlecraft, first of all.
You might be in there more than like 8 hours, right?
Yes, what do you do? Like if you drink a lot of water ahead of time.
No coffee and just
right.
You just go like, no diuretics,
or you just take some bottles with you. I don't know. So the thing, Trip's sister. So Trip, I believe, I don't know if Trip is from Florida. He has a generic Southern accent, so I'm sure someone will tell me where he's from. But his sister lived in Florida and was killed when the Zindi attacked. And so he wants to make sure that doesn't happen to anybody else. And so buys into the mission of attacking the super weapon. And he feels like, you know, I think that's the point where he thinks, well, if the real Trip, you know, Trip Prime, can help defeat it, then really I should sacrifice my life so that no other relatives of folks will die, this, as my sister did.
It's important to note that for these moral questions, his decision, Sim's decision to sacrifice himself, and Archer's decision to like sacrifice both of them, when you describe sort of the arc that's kind of driving the whole this season right now, it makes it a little more compelling, because without that data, I was like, Archer murderer, and like what, you know, and also Sim, mm-hmm. like, dude, why are you giving up? Like, it's Star Trek. You like heroes like win. Right?
Yeah, so you should figure out a solution to this so that everybody lives.
Right, exactly. So without that sort of backing motivation, I found both of those decisions sort of hard to swallow.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, when you know that they are looking for a planet that's going to blow up Earth, it makes it a little more. They should have made it a little clearer in the stakes that were involved. I guess they probably feared like how much backstory should we do as opposed to how much should we focus on, you know, the amazing growing Trip. But I guess they opted for the Trip.
Well, and I guess I'm assuming they tie this. I mean, yes, the season, the episode should stand on its own, but they probably assume, yes, they're not like, most people aren't like me, where they're just kind of swooping in, winning one episode and like, you know, in a single season, right?
Most people are not watching them in random order to be on a podcast. Yes, yeah, so sadly, my premise for the podcast breaks down a little bit thanks to Enterprise and later seasons of Deep Space Nine, because with TNG and the original series and Voyager, pretty much, it was very episodic. There was not a lot of arcs. Things like completely revelatory things would happen in one episode, and then no one would ever speak of it again.
Right.
Which is a little weird, but it makes it good for someone who is running a podcast in which you watch a random episode of Star Trek, because you could, it's all encapsulated.
Well, I mean, like, this is off topic, but like, I liked when it's all tied together. One of my favorite things to do after watching Game of Thrones with my wife is we just talk through all the threads, and it's like, it's all tied together. It'd be very hard to watch like a Game of Thrones as a single thing, because so much is going on. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that gives you more sort of motivation to go through it as well. So I think I like it when it's all kind of tied together.
Oh no, I totally like it as well as a viewer, as a person who hosts a podcast where I try to get someone to watch a random episode of Star Trek. It makes it a challenge, but it's worth it. Especially there are later seasons of Deep Space Nine that have like 10 episode arcs, and you're like, I can't ask someone to watch the sixth episode in a 10 episode arc. Well, I can, but then I can't ask someone to watch 10 episodes so we can talk about it. But anyway, we have to go back to Enterprise because it's almost done. Sim says, okay, I'm gonna do it. And I actually, you know, I teared up a little bit when he drops by and talks to, well, he has to go to sick bay because that's where they do the procedure, but he talks to Phlox, and he says, you know, Phlox, not only, well, they have this nice, Archer at some point tells him, no, you're not just a copy of Trip, you have your own memory, so you're your own thing. Maybe that when they're flying that little drone. And so that's a nice little scene. And then he talks to Phlox just before Phlox is going to kill him, basically, and says, you know, I don't just have Trip's memories. I remember my childhood, and you were the best father anyone could hope for. And then Phlox says, you were a great son. And I got a little teary, I will admit. Then he gets killed.
Yeah, then he kills him.
He kills him. And they save Trip. Hooray. And then we switch back to the funeral that we saw at the start of the episode. And we find out, I guess for perhaps people who are a little slow in the audience, they pan to Trip standing there next to Sim. And it is Sim's funeral, not Trip's funeral. They put him in the age-old Star Trek tradition of shoving someone in a photon torpedo and shooting them out, although they shoot them out very slowly.
Yeah, it doesn't burn up in like, you know, in like some orbit or anything. It's like just, hey, we're going to send you on your way.
That's right. We'll just shoot you out some random location, and you will leave the ship for some reason very, very slowly. I don't understand that.
So Trip is like got some weight on him too. Like when, as people tell him the story of what would happen while he was in that coma, he's like, oh crap, right? Mm-hmm. I've got this person's life on my hands, right? That's a bit of a guilt trip to wake up to from coma when you nearly blew up the ship.
It is, and Trip and Sim has kind of blown up Trip as well, because he's told Archer basically, yeah, my father told me that I should be an engineer, my mother told me I should be an architect, but I really always wanted to be a captain, which is, I don't think, anything Trip has ever said to anyone. And then, of course, the whole T'Pol thing, where Sim tells T'Pol, I just have to tell you, I don't know if these are my feelings or if they're Trip's feelings, but I love you.
Yeah, hello.
And T'Pol's like, what? And then, we even skipped over this, then before he dies, T'Pol kisses him and basically says, I love you too. And then, but she's talking to Trip, not to Sim, but she's kissing Sim. It's weird.
Wait, is there, like, does this happen later? Like, do they get together later? Because I assume that was the introduction of, like, that relationship being, like, a real thing.
Yes, they do.
Okay, got it.
Pretty sure get, and I think, spoiler alerts for people, in season 4, Trip, at the end of it, dies. So... I know.
Oh my gosh.
Like, he really does. I think he does. Either he or Reed. Somebody
does.
Have
more Barada available to, like, make more Sims?
They were fresh out. Someone had it on a salad. It was very sad. So I think...
Especially for Sim, who, like, died for him, right?
Yeah, that's true. Sim gave up his life, and then he dies. Throws it away. Probably saving the Enterprise. I don't remember why he dies, but... But he and T'Pol get together thanks to Sim, so thank you, Sim.
Yay, go Sim.
I will say, now, I'm not saying that you cannot get stripped naked, nearly half naked, and do acupuncture pressure point things on close friends.
Right.
But it seemed kind of intimate to me, that scene.
Yeah, so that was, so again, coming in totally blank relative to most things, I thought they were already, and it came obvious as she was dealing with Sim that they weren't, but at the beginning, I thought they were like a couple, because mm-hmm. they were in there like rubbing each other and like finding pressure points and that sort of thing. That's what was my working assumption, so I kind of changed that as I was watching.
Yes, and I don't remember I knew they got together, but I don't remember when, so I thought, oh, this is after they're a couple, and then it's like, no, they're not. They're just friends who... rub each other all over the place, which, hey, you know, I've no judgment there. I'm just thinking things can happen in that kind of situation. But, you know, I'm not a Vulcan and I'm not an evolved 26th century, whatever, human. So, you know, they've gotten past this. They can do it.
Yes.
So this is really the first Enterprise episode you've seen in a long time.
Very long time.
My question, I have two questions for you. A, did you think it was a good episode of Star Trek? And B, did it make you intrigued to see more Enterprise?
I'm going to answer the second question first. No, it was a good episode, and it felt very much like Star Trek. And I haven't watched in a while, so it was a little bit of like kicking off the cobwebs and whatnot. It's sort of like I said before, I faded on around Voyager time. It felt very familiar to me. There's a structure to Star Trek episodes, and I'm like, oh, this again. And it's like, oh, okay, I get how this goes, and then this is going to happen, and blah, 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 and yada, yada. And it's all kind of interesting moral quandaries and whatnot. But it's, I wasn't like in love with the characters. And again, that comes with time. It can't really judge on one episode. But like a good it was very, very Star Trek to me. It was very obvious about like, okay, these are all the kind of tropes, Star Trek tropes in play here. And that was very familiar and fun. But not dying to watch Star Trek again because of it.
I think that's fair. And I will say, I thought I give Enterprise a lot of guff. I thought this was a good episode. And it made me tear up. So, and I think it was pretty much trying its damnedest to make you tear up. So points to that for making me tear up. The music apparently won an Emmy, so I didn't really notice the music, but good job. Yeah, it won some award.
Joe LeVar Burton.
That's right, and directed by TV's own LeVar Burton. So good job to him. Well, Michael, thank you so much for joining me.
Absolutely.